Welcome, this is William Evans and we are Shifting Gears. Our guest today is Paul Hempel from the Colorado Rural Water Association. Welcome, Paul.
Thank you, Will. I'm really happy to be here.
Tell us, what is the Colorado Rural Water Association?
Colorado Rural Water Association is one of 50 rural water associations across the country. We are under the umbrella of the National Rural Water Association, and primarily over the 40-year history of CRWA, we have worked to help operators for water and wastewater utilities become trained to operate their plants. We offer trainings to these operators, so at the end of the day, they can be certified to run them. And we also have circuit riders. At this point, 3 water circuit riders and 2 wastewater circuit riders. And they travel around the state visiting water and wastewater utilities to help them with technical and regulatory issues. As a matter of fact, each circuit rider must make 30 face-to-face contacts a month. So that's 150 between our water and wastewater circuit riders a month, and quite a bit on a yearly total. We also have an energy efficiency assessment program for water and wastewater utilities, and I work in the source water protection division for rural water.
All right. And where are you from? Did you grow up here in Colorado?
No, I'm from the great state of New Jersey, the Garden State.
All right. Well, I can hear the rain on the roof where you are in Boulder.
Yes, it is trickling a little bit out here, a little gray and chilly, but, I think we're all seeing the light on the spring tunnel ahead of us.
Well, I thought so, but then when I went out to walk the puppy this morning, it felt like spring had left and winter was back.
Yes, sometimes difficult to grasp spring at its fullest.
Yeah, you can't grasp it. You just enjoy it when it's here.
True.
Tell me a little bit about your relationship with water. How did you land in this position?
Well, gee, that's a good question. I can, proudly say that my interest in environmental concerns goes way back. And when I was about 20, I moved to San Francisco, and my first job there was canvassing for Greenpeace, so going door to door to save whales and seals. And at the time, the Westslope contingents of Greenpeace were also very involved in nuclear energy and things like that. But I think just growing up, I adopted a passion for environmental protection, and it began with working with Greenpeace way back then. And then I decided to go back to school. I had gone to college a couple of years, and when I moved to San Francisco, I didn't. And when I moved to Colorado for the first time, like around 1988, I went to CU. I asked them where the jobs were going to be in 10 years, and they said in water. So I started taking water classes, and then began a career in volunteer water quality monitoring through the what is now the Division of Parks and Wildlife, where I led. Well, I helped with the administration of school elementary or middle school, but primarily high school screen teams in doing water quality monitoring with a strict QAQC, quality assurance, quality control built into any monitoring to make it robust and accurate. And from there, right around the turn of this century, I got a job with the Roaring Fork Conservancy to build the stream team program for them.
All right.
It had already been established in the high schools around here, but I got going on working with the great staff at the Conservancy in helping develop this program.
So Rick tell Lucero me,
was a cubicle neighbor of mine at the time,
right?
And Chad Rudow is now running that program for them.
So tell me what source water means to you.
Well, I've been in this job for 10 years and never been asked that question, but I think, you know, what it boils down to is protecting public health.
Yeah, I think that's a very good answer. So how long has the Rural Water Association been in action here in Colorado?
Well, we've been around for almost 40 years now. It varied a little bit in the inception of rural waters across the country, but all of us, via our umbrella organization at National, are funded primarily through the Farm Bill. So my position as a source water specialist with rural waters through the Farm Bill, as are those circuit riders. And we also get funding for other services through the State Health Department. And the EPA used to be a funder of ours as well. But right now we're feeling pretty solid under this Farm Bill that was just past December.
Do you work for the state or for the federal government?
Well, specifically, I work for Colorado Rural Water, and we're a lobbying nonprofit. But our funding, my particular funding, comes through the federal government, the USDA.
Okay, well, the reason I say that is that I saw a website that said .gov, and I assumed it was, is that the federal or is that the state?
Usually, well, at least with the folks at the health department, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment that we work with, their emails end with state.co.us. So gov could be a federal.
Yeah, I think it must be. I'm interested in this guide that was produced in 2016 to open modes of communication between the oil and gas community and the drinking water providers and swallowers. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about that?
When we look at source water protection, I think if I gave a little background here, when we go into working with water providers in their communities with source water protection planning, we generally take a look at potential contaminant sources to the drinking water supply,
right. Specifically,
which might include a well or a surface water intake. So during the development of plans by our whole source water team, really throughout the state, in working with oil and gas development issues, and in particular what was happening with the Thompson Divide, and still is to a degree, but when things were coming to a head there, I was working with Town of Carbondale and Oak Meadows Service Company and Water Association in developing source water plans. And, of course, you know, as everybody knows, there were several leases up for actual activation of drilling at the time.
Right.
And in both those plans, those water providers identified oil and gas as the biggest threat to their drinking water supply. And then that spurred me to think about, well, you know, how can I best, you know, provide information to water providers in their communities in how to work with the industry as they gather leases and move through the process so they can, you know, basically keep up with them and be able to weigh in where necessary during the whole process that the industry is involved in. And that's what that guide is all about. It's a total neutral information piece for communities so they can best interact with the industry in, you know, making sure all the right things happen.
Well, and how successful has that been?
Well, I'm not exactly sure, you know, how those plans in themselves helped the determination by the Forest Service a couple of years ago, which, you know, helped the Thompson Divide for sure. But we did work with the Forest Service during the development of those plans, and actually went down to the BLM offices in Silt so I could help these communities present their case. And at a public hearing, I actually gave a very unbiased presentation on the results of those plans and what those communities wanted to do during a BMP process or a BLM process there.
Yeah, I think
in other parts of the state, a former colleague of mine worked on a collaborative plan with Newcastle Rifle, Parachute, and Silt, and Mobile Home Park, and had great participation with the industry and helped the creation of what we call emergency response notification cards to connect the industry folks with the water providers in case of a spill. But really the best example of we have was a plan that was conducted and finished in Morgan County with Morgan County Quality Water with another colleague of mine, Colleen Williams. And about 4 years ago, the Morgan County Quality Water was highlighted that a pipeline was going to be constructed through their source water protection area. But when they were notified of that, and we worked with the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission to work with the industry, and eventually they rerouted that pipeline around the source water protection area.
Well, that sounds like a good idea, because that's a really hot, problematic issue from the perspective of toxicity and endocrine-disrupting chemicals.
Well, are you talking about in terms of industry, oil and gas industry?
Yeah.
Well, there's the potential for all that. Let's put it that way.
We
want to make sure that we do the best things for the water providers to work with the industry and making sure those drinking water supplies are protected.
Yes. So you're listening to Shifting Gears and a conversation with Paul Hempel about source water. Tell us more about this December 2018 reauthorization of the Farm Bill that provides encouragement of practices to protect source water for drinking purposes and specifically directs the USDA to emphasize protection of source water.
Oh, yeah. That is a big breakthrough, I think, in connecting producers, private property owners with source water protection. And, millions of dollars are going to that. 10% of the Farm Bill has, directed funds through USDA for source water protection. And, primarily through the Natural Resources Conservation Service. And those folks, along with their on-the-ground conservation districts, will be receiving all of the funding, will go through them to go right to the producers to help them with land use or other issues that they may have. I think it's all voluntary, but certainly a big boon to protecting drinking water supplies, privately and municipally, and even for, all of the smaller public utilities out in the plains and HOAs and metropolitan districts, et cetera.
Yeah, I know it's a big deal because they shut off the intake valve on Raccoon Creek in Des Moines because of toxic agricultural runoff, and I don't think they've got it resolved. They're not happy.
Yeah, and, non-point source pollution like that is a big problem for aquatic resources, and this Farm Bill now really, provides so many people across America with the opportunity to, work on specific issues where that is occurring, working collaboratively together with the community and ensuring that, some of these spots are, buttoned up a little bit, which will only go and lead towards, protection and healthy drinking water and aquatic resource water supplies.
It sounds like it's part of a very large phenomenon and problem in the Midwest.
Yes, and every state has their own regulations on how to handle things, but I think, you know, more and more across the country and, you know, in Colorado particularly, that people are paying more and more attention to that. You know, obviously, downstream users are affected by upstream uses, and, you know, I really do believe that, you know, we're on a trend towards, you know, pulling it all together, you know, for, you know, much healthier aquatic resources.
Boy, I sure hope so. I'm interested if you can tell me anything about this this proposed new definition of the waters of the United States so we can provide certainty to farmers and landowners and the economy can continue to expand. Can you tell me anything mm-hmm. about that?
Well, this goes back to a long time battle over the description of permanent water bodies, lakes, streams, wetlands, and free-flowing streams, and how they're managed, but more importantly, the nexus they have with intermittent streams and temporary water bodies that, you know, dry up after the spring like that. And in the larger sense, over the years and via the Clean Water Act, the intermittent streams had seen a connection with the other more permanent water bodies, as you have it, and which added for protection around them, primarily from development, let's say. The Army Corps of Engineers manages that part of the Clean Water Act, I want to say, and for people who want to develop around these water bodies, need a 404 permit to proceed. The battle over this is removing the intermittent and temporary water bodies away or out of that part of the Clean Water Act, thus allowing for, you know, better access and opportunities for development around those water bodies. In the past, you know, it's usually a one-to-one creation of new wetlands, for instance, if you're going to be removing them from development.
So let me just kind of see if I understand what that was helpful. So there are could we call them seasonal water bodies that show up in show up in the spring and then they dry up in the summer and you don't see them until if there's enough rain or snow in the winter, next spring they show up again.
That's right. Usually intermittent water bodies or temporary or vernal ponds, stuff like that.
Yeah. So those intermittent water bodies would be removed from the Clean Water Act?
Well, this under this portion of the law.
That would be the intention of this new definition because President Trump's made a directive and seems like they're moving fast. There was a single public hearing held in February in Kansas City, but written mm-hmm. comments can still be made.
Yes. And, you know, I think each administration has their own approach on all of this. And, you know, I think everybody everywhere is just hoping that at the end of the day, you know, via this administration or another, that, you know, it'll come back to full protection of all these water bodies yearly and you know, seasonal, all of them. So, you know, I think that, you know, helps everybody and every creature and every water body more exponentially.
Well, I think we've got to move in that direction because there's a growing water tragedy going on globally.
Certainly.
What else is important for us to know, Paul, in terms of what's happening with water and what you're watching and working with?
Well, I think certainly, you know, the overall drought throughout the West is of concern. I was glad to see on a big picture scale that the lower and upper basin states were able to come together with some management decisions on how we're going to manage our water. I know it's a tricky piece of the puzzle for all, and I admire those who tackle that. I think in my realm, protecting drinking water supplies is important, and has come to the forefront even more so, as highlighted in the new Farm Bill. But a lot of it has to do with education, and that having everybody understand that their activities can affect drinking water supplies, aquatic ecosystems, if done improperly. And that runs the gamut from residential practices to folks who have storage tanks to wildfire concerns, agricultural concerns, as we've mentioned, but even other things, certainly like oil and gas, and just the way businesses operate, dispose of materials, restaurants, oil and grease practices, people who might have abandoned wells, things like that, that need to be properly capped. In my world, those are the types of things that I look at in, the ultimate protection of our water resources. Folks are, have got to deal with quantity, no doubt. The River District has always been a great manager of what we do in the valley. And, municipalities throughout the valley, Carbondale, Snowmass Village, Basalt, Aspen, all of them have really taken some proactive measures to protecting, what everybody has and cherishes in the Roaring Fork Valley. And I was hoping that with my work up there, would help, add to that work that is done to, really enhance what's going on up there.
Well, we appreciate that. And we're just at the end of our time, but give us a little bit about the Western Slope Source Water Protection Keep It Clean Partnership marketing campaign.
Okay, well, thanks for bringing that up. We've actually refined the name of this project, the West Slope Keep It Clean Partners. And
that's easier for me to say.
Yeah, and that's what we really decided. We needed to, narrow that down. But when I started working up in the valley 9 years ago, primarily with the city of Glenwood Springs to start things out, but also with Scott Leslie of Environmental Process Control, I started working with water providers, large and small, throughout the valley in developing source water protection plans. And it was at the beginning of that effort that I convened all the water providers to see where we might want to go during the development of these plans and sort of try to create a vision for that direction. And at the time, everybody had stated that education and outreach was the really primary goal that they wanted to achieve. But as it was at the time, the water providers, although with the passion to get the word out about protecting drinking water, didn't necessarily have the ways and means to do so, get the information out and the public informed. So we created a nexus with the watershed groups, particularly the Roaring Fork Conservancy, to create that nexus, because it's the watershed groups who already do that education and outreach. And so we were able to, make that link, and we've gotten other folks on board for this project that is still in its development, with Pitkin, Eagle, Garfield counties, and municipalities, including Aspen, Basalt, Carbondale, Gypsum, and Eagle, and Vail.
Well, and as you
along with the White River National Forest. So we're about to announce this project. This would be the first time we've actually ever publicly discussed it, but it's going to involve a lot of great things, and you know, its rollout will be coming in a couple of months as we, you know, get to the finish line with producing all of the material that we hope to do so.
Well, thank you, Paul. We appreciate what you're doing with that, and look forward to hearing more when it's appropriate for you to tell us more details.
Oh yeah, we're really excited about this upcoming project. So you know, stay tuned for that.
We'll look forward to it. This is KDNK. You've been listening to a conversation about source water with Paul Hempel from the Colorado Rural Water Association. This is William Evans. Thank you for listening.